You're listening to episode number 78 of The Green Elephant in the Room. This is your host, Eco Rico, and today we're talking about climate change. How did we get here, and why is it so hard to fix? The vast majority of us accept that climate change is real. We've all read the news reports and seen the alarming headlines. We know there are panicky conversations about time running out. But how urgent is it really? What can we do about it? And why is it so hard to tackle climate change? In a sense, we both know too much and too little. We're overwhelmed with facts, but we don't have a clear idea of what they mean for our lives. So it becomes difficult to take any action at all. Why is the climate change problem so hard to fix? The answer, in a nutshell, activities that cause emissions are ubiquitous, diverse, and deeply embedded in modern life. Also, the world's energy system is huge and long-lived. In addition, there are considerable political and psychological barriers. In this podcast episode, we will try to distill what makes this such a uniquely difficult problem. By knowing the why, we can get a new perspective on what is stalling climate change action and learn the most effective ways to fight it. First, let's take a brief historical outlook at how we got here and the consequence of industrialization. The world's climate was remarkably steady from before the birth of agriculture, some 8,000 to 10,000 years ago, until very recent times. Human civilization grew up in a stable climate and knew nothing else, despite the calamities caused on occasion by storms, floods, droughts, and so forth. Industrialization changed this. There's no single year that definitively marks the beginning of industrialization, but 1776 is probably as good a reference point as any. It was an eventful year, with the U.S. Declaration of Independence giving history one of its most famous dates. But in the long view of history, perhaps more important than any other events was James Watt's steam engines began to power industrial production about the same time. This, more than any other event, marks the beginning of the industrial era. In the nearly 2.5 centuries since 1776, world population has grown almost by a factor of 10. Economic output per person has also grown by a factor of about 10. Taking these two changes together, the world's economic activity has increased by a factor of about 100. This has put huge stresses on a range of natural systems, including the atmosphere, the oceans, and the living ecosystems which we are part of. The increase in the use of fossil fuels has been even greater than the increase in industrial activity. About 12 million tons of fossil fuels, almost entirely coal, were burned each year before 1776. Today, the world burns about 12 billion tons of fossil fuels each year, an increase of a factor of 1,000. Since that celebrated date, humans have poured over 1 trillion tons of global warming gases into our shared atmosphere and oceans, with the majority of it in just the last 30 years. Yes, these are huge numbers, but they are real. With my students, I do an activity. I ask, what's the difference between a million, a billion, and a trillion? I have them calculate how long it takes for a million seconds and a billion seconds and a trillion seconds to pass. I will save you the math. A million seconds takes a little less than 12 days to go by. A billion seconds takes 12,000 days, or just under 32 years to elapse. And a trillion seconds, 32,000 years. The difference between those three numbers is staggering. Another way of saying it is, a trillion is 1,000,000,000. That's the amount of global warming gases we have crammed into our skies and seas, 1,000,000,000 tons. In exploring this complex subject, we are going to categorize why it's so hard to fight climate change into three areas: the practical, the psychological, and the most challenging one, the political. Let's start with some of the practical aspects of why restoring our climate is such a difficult problem. The threat is global, but humans think local. CO2 is a global pollutant that can't be locally contained. The first key feature of climate change that puts it at odds with past environmental issues is that it's a global pollutant rather than a local pollutant. Whether I release a ton of CO2 in Los Angeles, London, or Lagos, it does the same damage to the globe. Contrast that with local pollutants, where if I release a ton of sulfur dioxide or nitrogen oxide in LA, the majority of the damage stays near LA. Thus, CO2 is far harder to manage and regulate. Another practical application is it would be simpler to deal with emissions if they were all in one place, whether Manhattan, Moscow, or Mumbai, or elsewhere. Instead, emissions are dispersed across billions of individual sources around the world, and they come from many different types of activities. Another practical consideration is developing countries contribute a large share of carbon pollution. The wealthy industrialized nations are by far the greatest contributors of carbon pollution, but the developing countries, consisting of billions of people, contribute a large share of global warming gases. Simply put, this isn't their top priority. We're asking very poor countries that are worried about where their next meal is coming from, or where they can send their kids to school, to incur costs to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to benefit the world. And that's a tough ask for a policymaker inside of a developing country. And a final practical point is the amount of CO2 emitted from our energy system is vast, and they are increasing. Global energy-related carbon dioxide emissions rose 6% in 2022 to 36 billion tons, their highest level ever. The problem is worse than its scale alone suggests. It would be simpler to deal with emissions if they were all in one place, whether Manhattan or elsewhere. Instead, emissions are dispersed across billions of individual sources around the world, and they come from many different types of activity, from transporting food and powering electronics to heating and cooling homes and offices. There is no single technology doing one thing to be replaced, but a wide diversity of technologies and applications. And the infrastructure that generates these emissions is gigantic. The world's energy system costs tens of trillions of dollars to build, and it's correspondingly immensely expensive to replace. Energy infrastructure often lasts many decades, so changing infrastructure tends to be a long-term process, with premature replacement expensive. Think about this. The U.S. energy infrastructure is one of the greatest engineering feats of all time. Walk out your front door, and there it is. In fact, it's hard to get away from. Now imagine replacing that by putting another new and staggeringly massive electrical energy structure on top of that. Let's explore some psychological aspects of why climate change is so hard to fix. A huge deterrent for many is the horrifying concept of consumer sacrifice. Let's face it, most of us have grown accustomed to our rich and abundant lifestyles. For many, it is how they identify and present themselves to the world, through their possessions. Even though many claim to value the environment, the expectation that they may have to sacrifice and lower their quality of life is, well, terrifying. Consumers seem to equate environmentally friendly behavior with a loss in quality of life and comfort. It prevents them from changing their behaviors and joining the efforts of mitigating climate change. However, there is one major flaw in the sacrifice assumption. Science doesn't support it. Whatever one individual's relative ability to contribute to the fight against climate change, research shows that acting green is linked with more happiness and satisfaction, not less. One recent study showed that engaging in pro-environmental behaviors, such as taking short showers, avoiding food waste, or buying products with less packaging, is linked to enhanced well-being in 7 various nations, from India to the United Kingdom to Poland and Brazil. These effects are strong, no matter the person's income. There have been a host of studies about material sacrifice and life satisfaction, and we've included links to these on the webpage for this podcast. Another psychological quirk is, for now, most people are treating climate change like it's still hypothetical. Until this summer, we often talked about climate change as a theory, an abstract, far-off future concept that we could assume would arrive at some distant date, something we could pontificate about until a plucky genius invented some sort of sucky machine that left our air and oceans pure and sparkling again. This is starting to change. There's never been a summer like this in recorded history. We would hope that after the extreme heat, flooding, and droughts, that would be enough of a wake-up call that global citizens would demand climate action on a scale that is proportionate with the magnitude of the problem. We know this sounds dour, but most people who are suffering through this are still considering this as just weather events, and our summer from hell will soon be over and behind us. We are going to discuss this in greater detail next episode. But for now, trust us, there is not going to be an overwhelming swell of popular support for major changes. Most people don't give it that much thought. Another psychological effect is there's no direct link to a smoking gun. Despite the global threat from climate-altering gases, it's hard for scientists to link them to a specific environmental disaster. Without a definitive culprit, it's easier for skeptics to ignore or explain away climate change effects. Think of it this way. If an evil genius had set out to design a perfect environmental crisis, climate change would be a brilliant choice because there is little empirical proof. It is something out there in the sky that is not easily observed or accurately accounted for. At a psychological level, 2 things are happening when we acknowledge climate change. We realize that we are the villains, and we realize that we need to change our current lifestyles. Both these things make us very uncomfortable, and we find that denial or ignoring it brings us back to our happy world, a world where we can have whatever we want and keep looking through our rose-tinted glasses. And when we live in denial, we don't have to think about it and talk about this to anyone, which makes everyone think that nobody thinks about it. And then a strong bystander effect kicks in where nobody wants to be the first one to act. Now, let's examine the dark heart of the forces that are hampering our ability to effectively deal with our climate and ecological crises: politics. Let's start with the fact that U.S. political parties are more polarized on the issue of climate change than even gun control or abortion. This is the foundational issue to taking action on climate, and it is so important to understand and overcome that we're going to devote a near future podcast episode to it. It's going to be instructive to take a moment to understand why this is such a difficult problem to begin with for politicians and governments. Climate change comes from the collective weight of all our economic activities around the world. The richer we are, the more we consume, and the more we emit. This also makes carbon emissions radically unequal. The world's richest 1% emits twice as much as the poorest 50%. This is a problem unlike anything ever faced before by governments. It has very long-term consequences, and there's a great deal of confusion about what those consequences will be and who will bear them. While no one country can make changes sufficient to turn the tide of climate change, international cooperation on the issue remains difficult. This just might be the world's greatest collective action problem, which is when rational, self-interested decisions of individuals make the circumstances of the group worse, and vice versa. It's rational for an individual country not to drastically reduce greenhouse gases, given most economies are heavily based on energy resources that emit them. Yet, if all nations act that way, indeed, that's what's happening, most countries would eventually be worse off due to the cumulative impacts of all our emissions. To put it another way, what's better for each individual country in isolation is actually worse for the planet as a whole. Conversely, what is worse for each individual country over time would be better for the planet. Republicans often argue that the U.S. shouldn't reduce its emissions because China and India aren't reducing theirs. That's how the collective action problem works. It could prevent even modest efforts addressing the problem. Another political sticking point is the damage caused by most climate change pollutants will happen in the future, which means most of us won't truly be affected by climate change. It's a hypothetical scenario conveyed in charts, graphs, and somber pronouncements from climate scientists. While we'd like politicians and voters to be moved by selflessness, this isn't always the case. In truth, policymakers have very little incentive to act. Sadly, the people who stand to be most harmed by climate change aren't even born yet. Another political dilemma we have is a time disconnect. Enacting policies today to cut greenhouse gas emissions won't have a discernible impact on global warming for decades, if not centuries. That is because we have already locked in significant warming due to our historical emissions. This makes it a tough sell, but especially in our 2 to 6 year election cycles. Joe Biden's climate plan promises net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, a common benchmark among other Democratic politicians and climate scientists broadly. Biden would be pushing 110 years old when he'd have to check, likely from the afterlife, on how this policy did. I'll be 100. How old will you be? Unlike other policies, climate change is cumulative. The longer we wait to address it, the bigger the problem becomes and the harder it gets to solve, fueling a feedback loop that makes solutions ever more difficult. By contrast, passing legislation on most other public policy issues aren't cumulative and will result in almost immediate, direct impact on millions of people. A new healthcare law can affect people on day one of enactment. The bottom line, big climate policy would have to offer concrete benefits outside of its impact on emissions, think jobs or energy security, to overcome this time disconnect. Here is a summary of our key message. It's hard to tackle climate change because it's difficult to understand. The causes are complex and the results are so horrifying that at an emotional level, they seem unbelievable. We need to use our powers of reason, though, to accept the reality and do everything we can to prevent it. Here's some actionable advice. Become a pragmatic climate change activist. We often feel that we have to change our lives in extreme ways in order to make a real difference. The thought of having no children, or pedaling 30 kilometers to work every day on a bicycle, and never eating a steak again is enough to paralyze any would-be activist because it feels impossible. But smaller actions make a difference too, like taking 2 flights less per year, or carpooling with a neighbor, or leaving the bacon out of your breakfast bun. Small, doable actions will cumulatively have a big effect. Now, of course, what I just described about personal sacrifice is the ideal. However, if this hasn't happened by now on a grand scale, really, what is it going to take? As I'm recording this in mid-August, the Hawaiian island of Maui has just suffered through a horrific fire tragedy. Even though this happened in an American state, even though this happened in a tropical paradise that millions travel to every year, even though many have very fond memories of Lahaina and Maui, you would hope this would galvanize people to demand more sweeping climate action. The sad reality is, this cataclysm will not move the needle at all. If this sounds too harsh or dour, so be it. On this podcast episode, we focus on a variety of reasons why climate is such a challenging problem. On the next podcast episode, number 79, we are concentrating on the essence of why we are failing to give this issue the full attention it deserves. And to sum that up in a single word, apathy. Our greatest battle is going to be human indifference, inertia, detachment, versus the biggest challenge ever that is now knocking on our door, the annihilation of our biosphere. In an end, not to leave on such a dreary note, we will leave you with just the opposite. While the great unwashed masses are out there trying to squeeze every bit of pleasure out of our deteriorating planet, it is the few, very few, people that don't need to be run over by a truck to see what is happening to our world and where it's heading. The only thing that even has a ghost of chance of working to fix this problem is that small but dedicated group of global citizens, and they need to assemble, organize, mobilize, and unleash the capacity to make our collective voices heard and actively participate in the restoration of our exquisite but rapidly crumbling planet. Extensive research reveals that time and time again, a small number of dedicated people can increase in number until they reach a critical point. At this point, their moral message and influence can explode, having a remarkable impact on the broader population. It's that easy, it's that hard. We have to ask ourselves, is the third planet orbiting around an unremarkable star in a spiral galaxy worth saving? If the answer is affirmative, we have a deal for you. The Green Elephant has dedicated a series of podcasts, episodes number 62 through 66, about how this monumental but magnificent goal can be accomplished. Also, the Green Elephant has designed a comprehensive online encyclopedia of eco-solutions. Called A Call to Act, it is a well-organized, thoughtfully laid out resource of hundreds of climate groups to join and eco-action activities to be taken. Here's just a few of the opportunities available. Eco-adoption programs. Adopt an orphan elephant, a sea turtle, a heron's nest, a pond, a tree, or even an insect. The sharing economy, what it is, and how you and the planet can benefit from it. As addressed in this episode, how human psychology can help fight climate change. The best sustainable, ethical, and environmental phone apps. The power and purpose of political protest. Going jet-free, alternatives to flying. The future of meat. Tools for biodiversity restoration. Climate activism and the arts. Climate activism and comedy. Seriously, you will discover fulfilling opportunities that you may have never even heard about. You will find links to all this and more in the show notes. Saving democracy. Saving civilization, saving the planet, saving ourselves. This is too big a moment to pass up.
Thank you.